All right, let's ask the professor. The doctor is in. Wasn't that Lucy? Wasn't Lucy the doctor in the Peanuts?
Yes, yes.
The doctor is in. Charlie Brown was always having some psychological difficulty.
Yes, he had fear.
Fear.
And she diagnosed him one time as having pantophobia.
Which was?
Fear of everything. I'm happy because that comes from two
Poor
Greek
Charlie
words.
Brown. Yeah. The voice you hear is that of Dr. Jeff Gibbs. He is professor here at Concordia Seminary, also the author of the Concordia Commentary on Matthew. How many volumes to that?
Well, it'll be three.
Three volumes?
Yeah, it's a little embarrassing to say.
You have to come up with a couple $100 to buy those, baby.
Oh, not so much, but too much, yeah. So go to the library, check it out, take it back.
Is that all done now?
Second volume is finished.
Second volume?
Yeah. So.
And then you got to write a third volume?
I get to write a third volume.
What happens if you get hit by a bus?
What
are we going to do? We got two volumes. And
well, you know, as far as I can tell, Chuck, the Holy Christian Church on Earth has got along just fine for about 2,000 years without my commentary.
So are you teaching here in the summertime?
No. Summer, I actually assume duties along with being an author in the commentary series itself. I'm the New Testament editor for the series. So that means the summer I'm available to work on other people's material.
Sounds like a heavy responsibility.
Well, it's you know how it is in life. You end up doing surprising things, but really it's more of a joy and kind of a challenge because these are learned men who are writing on 1 John and 1 Thessalonians.
Exactly why I don't think I would want to be the guy to write a note on another pastor slash professor slash theologian's. You might want to clean this up. I don't think I want to be that guy.
Well, you put a lot of smiley faces on it, you know. So that
do you use a red pen?
I do, actually, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, right.
So the red pen is out?
Yeah, that's right.
You use a green pen and a smiley pen.
Right, something like that.
I got a question for you.
Sure, what's up?
This is a story that came out this past week, which I found fascinating, and I thought to myself, aha, the doctor is in. We'll talk about this on Friday. The story is a blogger whose pro-life story, by the way, Dr. Gibbs and his wife are pro-life leaders, I think you could say. Couldn't we describe you as that?
I think maybe so, yeah, in some sort of small way.
A blogger whose pro-life story tugged on the heartstrings of thousands online has formally apologized for deceiving all who had prayed for and supported her throughout the last few months of what was recently revealed to be a fictitious pregnancy. Quote, I know this post will not change what has been done, Becca Buhausen, 26 years old, wrote on her blog Sunday. I don't expect it to, but I do hope it helps with some of the hurt that I have caused. For months, Buhausen, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this, who identified herself only as B, or April's mom, wrote about her unborn baby, April Rose, who she said was diagnosed as terminally ill in the womb. Her posts were long, they were detailed, they were also fabricated. But the last part didn't stop Buhausen from continuing even as she drew more and more readers and supporters. Almost overnight, I was receiving emails from people who at one point had been pregnant and unmarried or had suffered loss or were Christian but believed in the sanctity of life in all circumstances. She describes herself as a pro-life Christian. As her readership grew, she continued to, quote-unquote, feed the story. But readers became suspicious after she claimed last Sunday night that she had given birth to her miracle baby, reporting in her blog that April Rose had survived a home birth, only to die hours later. What tipped them off was the photo she posted of the baby, which a number of readers recognized to be that of a lifelike doll made by Salt Lake City-based Bountiful Baby. Sensing that the jig was up and fearing that her identity would be uncovered, Buhausen scrambled to delete her blogspot, Twitter, and Facebook accounts. But it was too late by then. Her true identity was revealed, and the web of lies she spun gradually became unraveled. I wrote many of my posts under dishonest context, she admitted Sunday. I lied, she continued. Worse still, I lied to a community of people whose only intention was to support me through this time, and that is wrong. And for that, I am sorrier than you could know. So my question to you is, for the apparently, potentially, thousands of people
mm-hmm.
who were lifting up prayers to Almighty God
right.
on behalf of this doomed baby.
Right, this situation that didn't actually exist.
Did those prayers arrive?
To God? Sure they did. But see, God always reserves the right to answer prayers in the right way. And, of course, as we and all, as you've heard it said, sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes it's no, and sometimes it's wait. Sometimes it's I have a better idea.
So there's a fourth option.
Well, the fifth option maybe does not apply.
And that is?
Well, that's the option that people think they're praying about a situation that doesn't actually, you know, exist. Now, I can readily imagine that, you know, a merciful God would take a prayer out of a genuine Christian heart on behalf of a child and somehow translate it on behalf of a troubled woman who somehow has confused reality and fantasy, like any number of people have, and somehow assume that you can have almost an alternate existence just because it's posted on the web. See, this is a real problem in our society, and I think it's, I don't know anything about it really, but my guess is that it's related to the gradual erosion of real human community and contact in America in general.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I just have been so taken over the last couple of years with the work that we heard about several years ago here on our campus. There's a Harvard sociologist whose name actually escapes me. I'd recognize it if I heard it, but he wrote this well-known book, Bowling Alone, The Decline of Social Capital in American Society. And social capital is a fancy sociological phrase for people getting together. I mean, actually face-to-face, you know. There's material capital, there's economic capital, there's social capital. And in the last 50 years, across the board, in all socioeconomic strata, in all categories of life, Americans simply don't hang out anymore. They don't go to bridge club. They don't go to PTA. If they join something, they join it online,
mm-hmm.
and you are a member because you charge something to your credit card, right? And so what I just fear that increasingly, I mean, look at Facebook, look at Twitter, look at MySpace. I mean, this is sort of a substitute for reality. And it's fun, it's fast, it's entertaining, it can be exciting, and you can get a lot of notice even if what you're posting is completely, to not put too fine of a point on it, phony. And people actually living vicariously as opposed to living really.
Yeah.
If I can say it that way. I think it's a real strange and difficult area, because you know what? It's easier to live on the web. If I don't have to look you in the eye, and you don't have to look me in the eye, I mean, that takes work, that takes wisdom, that takes patience and love and maturity. So it's easier to be typing.
Encouraged or discouraged with these current trends?
Oh, I think it's a potential denial of what we are as human creatures, as God made us to be.
Now, this is interesting. This is kind of coincidental, because we just finished a study in Colossians. We did the last verses 7 and following,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of a laundry list of names.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Demas and,
yeah.
you know, Aristarchus and the boys. And
the gist of the conversation we had with Pastor Matt Rogland was about this, about church being human beings
right.
who form relationships.
Right.
And maybe in the first century, those relationships were more important, because it was kind of, it was just adversity all the time to be a Christian. You just didn't walk down the street wearing your Christian cross around your neck. It's not like that now.
Right.
Maybe it will be in the not-too-distant future, but it's not like that now. So church gathering,
mm-hmm.
congregating,
mm-hmm.
maybe for a lot of reasons, but one of them is not necessarily, and maybe even probably not, so that we can socialize, so that we can interact at a
right.
fairly high level. We do that
right.
on Facebook.
Yes, yes.
So let's put this in the context of church now. As you evaluate, I mean, you're training pastors.
Right.
Is it important for church to be a socialization place?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the place we need to work on it more aggressively and more deliberately is, in the case of what I do for a living, is helping the community of Concordia Seminary to actually be a human community. And again,
how's that going?
Oh, it's terrible and great at the same time, the way it always is. It depends on each person stepping up and making the effort, you know. But see, the problem is that what we're facing is a kind of a tidal wave of a cultural phenomenon. And so it's carrying everyone, Christians and non-Christians alike.
That tidal wave is what?
Is this sort of non-face-to-face.
Electronic socialization?
Exactly. And so, for instance, there's a fellow who I see all the time riding his bicycle on campus. And I've wanted, you know, he does it for exercise, clearly. He must live fairly close at hand. And yesterday, he always comes down our street, and he makes a circle, and then he goes back the other way. So I was so happy. I thought to myself, I got to introduce myself to this man. See, he's about my age, I think.
You're actually going to burst into his life?
Well, he actually stopped because Renee and I are, you know, we do long, very slow distance running, and we have a little, I don't know if you've seen him, a sticker on our cars that says simply 26.2.
Marathon. See,
yeah, which is a marathon distance. Well, he got curious, and he actually, I was working in the yard, and he actually stopped, and he said, I got to ask you. He says, is this like a Bible verse? Because I don't know if he's a Christian, but he knows this is the seminary and so forth. So I said, no, it's just a marathon. So I introduced myself. His name is Mark. I can't remember his last name. But see, now when I see him, I'll wave, and I'll say, hi, Mark, you know. And we have people that walk through the seminary, and they're nice people, and I see them all the time, so... there's another guy who walks, and he's a runner. His name is Earl. I can't remember his last name. There are two ladies named Terry and Judy. Hi, Terry and Judy. You know, mm-hmm. These are people. You know, they're real people.
You're getting dangerously close to, forming a relationship.
I know. I mean, it's bizarre.
Aren't you, like, terrified?
Well, it's okay. Yeah, they didn't ask me for money. but again, so this is affecting Christians and non-Christians alike, and because it relates to our identity... If you could say it this way, according to the first article of the Apostles' Creed, that is, God created us to be human creatures under His care and in community of all kinds, whether it's church, outside church. I mean, this is the way we're designed, and if we abandon this existence, it's bad for us. And you see this in, you know, like this silly and probably tragic story of this blogger pretending to be pregnant. I mean, this is... You can't pretend to be pregnant. Well, you can, but it's a lot harder face-to-face, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways, and I'm kind of a Luddite, I know, but technology is a great blessing. I am on Facebook. I never use it. In fact, I don't know how to use it. But so I'm not against technology per se, but, you know, this is really an issue, I think, in American society because, as you've noticed, it's a lot easier to lie online. It's a lot easier to be mean online. It's a lot easier to be unfair and cruel online.
Well, and they have this has been around for a while, this so-called avatar existence where you can create an alter ego. And,
I know.
And you know, I know. You really are, in your own little electronic way, playing God. You create another being.
Right.
And then...
and it's easier.
Wow.
And it's fun. See, life, real life, as you know, is not always easy. And it's not always fun. But you know what? It's real. It's the way God... And I'm not talking about Christian, non-Christian. I'm talking about human beings and what we were intended by God, however a person conceives God, blah, blah, blah. This is the way we were meant to be.
So somewhere in the New Testament, you've read that New Testament, haven't you?
Yeah, a couple times. Okay. But only because it's my job. I'm not any more pious than the next person.
Somewhere in the New Testament, I think Jesus sort of just summarized the law.
Right.
Down to two commandments,
right.
Which is pretty amazing because I think that the so-called religious establishment of his day had worked that up to about 616 commandments.
Yeah,
something like that,
right.
So he summarizes it in two. He says, you got to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And then you got to love your neighbor as yourself. That pretty much is the law and the prophets, he said.
Everything
and
hangs
grateful,
on that.
I'm right. grateful that he did that because I two is better than 600 to me.
Yeah, so it all fits under that somehow, doesn't it?
It's that love your neighbor thing.
Yes.
I mean, if you're going to narrow it down to two and one of them is love your neighbor, then that pretty much implies that there's going to have to be some social interaction somehow.
So Putnam, Robert Putnam, I would really recommend this. It's a big, fat sociological study is what it is, but it's surprisingly readable. So if anybody's interested in this, and again, it has implications for American society, North American society in general, but also for the church, Bowling Alone. And
Bowling Alone.
He actually said when he came and lectured, he was very much a fan of religion as a sociologist, very favorable towards religion. And, of course, in this country, religion means 95% of the time, various expressions of Christianity, and there's Judaism, of course, a very small Muslim population. But the reason why, he says, by their calculations, and of course they're working the way sociologists do, 50% of all social capital, that is meaningful human interaction, happens under the umbrella of religion. Because all the other organizations, the Boy Scouts, the PTA, bridge clubs, bowling leagues, those are all on the decline. He says if people are getting together half the time, it's because they're going to church, they're going to a Bible class, they're on a committee, they're doing Habitat for Humanity, whatever it happens to be. It's under the umbrella of religion. That was very usually people bash religion, mm-hmm. right? But this guy's a big fan of religion. Why? Because it gets people together. That's
looking
why.
Looking at it from the outside.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very interesting. Very important.
So, if
so, this poor lady. I don't know what's going on with her, you know. I don't know why she felt the need to do this, but there's something wrong.
Well, here's how I characterized it in our conversation in the first hour with Pastor Matt Roglin, and I realize this is a gross, sweeping generalization, so it probably falls apart.
But hey, put it on your blog, right?
Whatever, yeah. It seems to me that pre-World War II America, largely an agrarian country.
More so, yes.
Lots of people who work from sunup to sundown, either on the farm or maybe in the factory, really looking forward to going to church on Sunday because that's when they see their friends.
Yeah, right. There's
and
a
let's
social...
have an ice cream social so that right. we can see our friends longer.
Right.
And let's have as many potlucks as we can have because we can see our friends.
Right.
Then the boomers come along, and the boomers elevate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's pretty hard to elevate myself if I'm going to interact with you, because what I got to do is elevate myself over you. That's not going to go well.
Right.
No-fault divorce arrives, Roe versus Wade arrives, and pretty much relationships are too complicated and too problematic. So
mm-hmm.
so we're not coming to the potluck.
Right.
And forget about the ice cream social. Now it's my understanding that the post-boomers are not too happy with that arrangement.
Right.
And are looking for ways mm-hmm. to somehow reclaim that. And, of course, it won't look anything like what the builders used to do because of
right.
technology.
Right.
Are you seeing that? And you know, you got young men coming to the seminary now. Are
mm-hmm.
they? Is there evidence that this is something that they're looking for or better at than maybe their boomer counterparts or... What are you seeing?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, Chuck. I don't know that I can give an answer just because my own anecdotal experience is so limited. But it is true that, you know, the problem has been raised to the surface about boomers and consumerism and all that kind of stuff. And so, as you know, every generation critiques the prior generation. So I do think there's a fighting chance in that regard. The problem, of course, is that is the power, again, the power of technology. It's entertaining. It's almost effortless, right? There's no, at least not right away, consequences. You know, if I yell at you, you know, face to face, then there's consequences right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me think twice about doing it. And if I do it, then there is an interaction. Of course, it might be destructive, might be constructive, but it happens right away. But again, you can hide, and you can, as this woman blogger said, you can lie, and there's no consequence, at least not right away, and maybe never. So I do fear, because of the power of this way of interacting, I just, I think you're right. I've actually been thinking a lot in the last few months about, you know, the, as you called them, the great commandments. Love takes time. I mean, it takes energy to love my neighbor. First, I have to meet him.
Can you empty yourself and pour yourself into another human being online?
No. Putnam was actually asked this question. He was asked about whether MySpace and Facebook and that kind of thing. I don't know if Facebook existed because we heard his lecture a couple of years ago, which in techno time is an eon ago, you know.
Boy, that's for sure.
But he was asked whether these things could promote genuine community, and he said only if they reinforce a relationship that was established face-to-face. So you have a friend that you had as a real face-to-face friend. Now they move away or they're traveling and you stay in contact with them. In that case, he said, yes, it clearly can be a good thing. It's like writing letters. Exactly. To a real person that you actually mm-hmm. really know. What's interesting is that, and Putnam is a pro. He's at Harvard, so he's a smart guy. And he's a wonderful lecturer. I mean, very engaging lecturer. So you could probably, here's the benefit of technology. You could probably go to the Concordia Seminary website and download his lecture, you know, from the symposium a couple of years ago at our iTunes site. But he actually proposes in his book that it's the television, which sort of was the horse getting out of the barn, and the rapidity with which television spread. And then, of course, a computer is just a variation of a television.
Now,
This is part of the problem.
I want to explore this with you, and we'll probably have to do this in substance on the other side of the break. But this woman is all caught up in this fabrication.
Yes.
And this is cannot be God-pleasing. This has got to, set the Lord's jaw.
She's lying.
She's lying.
Right. And deceiving.
And eliciting all of these profound, deep emotional responses from all these people who are offering up prayers to the Lord. And then she posts this picture of this doll.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but I'm reading that and I'm thinking, well, you know, that was a stumble. That was pretty stupid if you're going to be involved in a fabrication. There are some places in the scriptures where there was deception going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no lightning bolt, really, to speak of, but there was a revelation. I'm thinking of Joshua 7, where Achan disobeys mm-hmm. the command of God,
mm-hmm.
takes the spoils of war unto himself, and hides it under a blanket in his tent.
Right.
And it doesn't happen that God says to Joshua, okay, it's Achan.
Yeah.
But there's this long period of time, I guess it was long, seemed like it would take a while, to parade all the tribes of Israel before Joshua, and then all the families of, mm-hmm. you know, and then finally Achan.
Right.
And then there's the David thing, sneaking around with Bathsheba and having Uriah killed, and probably thinking on the morning that Nathan was headed in his direction, everything's cool.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, and then there's Ananias and Sapphira. Well, we'll talk about
that. That's a little bit more of a lightning bolt one.
we'll talk about them the other side of the break. Stay with us. Here at AMA 50KFUO, as we look forward to our anniversary on December 14th, we are so grateful to our partners who have become anniversary underwriters in 2009. We say thanks to Concordia Publishing House, publishing works of inspiration and faith for more than 139 years, and Lutheran Senior Services, specializing in enhancing life for seniors at 19 locations in Missouri and Illinois. Thanks for celebrating with us on the occasion of our 85th anniversary year. On the next Joy. Have you gone to a concert recently? Imagine going to a concert that was accompanied by the sounds of gunfire outside. We'll hear some music that was born under those very frightening conditions during World War II. This is Ron Clem. Join me this week for Joy. Listen for Joy on the web at KFUO.org and Sunday afternoons at 4:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
What would discovering Noah's Ark really prove? The answer is next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment host, Ian Taylor.
In our previous program, we heard how two creationists had scaled Mount Ararat and had filmed an object projecting from the ice near the summit. That object looked very much like Noah's Ark. The year was 1989, and other creationists at the time could have reported with great fanfare that Noah's Ark had indeed been discovered. But that's not how science works. Confirmation of the discovery was necessary, and the following year, other creationists, using a helicopter, found that the object was simply a rock formation. Some Christians think that confirmation of Noah's Ark will cause millions to come to Christ. However, this is unlikely to be the case. We are reminded of the rich man in hell who asked that Lazarus be sent back from the grave to warn his brothers about the judgment. Jesus said, "Even though the dead be raised, still they will not believe." And there is something else. Confirmation of the ark resting too high on the mountain to be explained by a local flood would instantly make thousands of liberal theology books look good for nothing more than heating fuel. Even liberal scholars would be forced to accept what they now consider to be ignorant myths of a pre-scientific age. They would be forced to deal with our message that the Word of God is true in every subject that it mentions.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
The most popular part of our broadcast week at AM 850 KFUO is Sunday morning. Listeners like to tune to one or both of our Sunday morning live worship broadcasts. Our first service is at 8 o'clock and comes from St. Paul Lutheran Church in Columbia. The Reverend Stephen Tice is the pastor. Our late service comes from Beautiful Savior Lutheran Church in Bridgeton, where the Reverend David Brescher is serving as pastor. That broadcast begins at 10:30. Be a part of the tradition. Sunday morning worship on AM 850 KFUO, inspirational Christian radio for the world.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, host of Moments of Assurance. Do you ever have an agitated heart? Are the concerns and the worries of your life interfering with the joy and peace you thought the Christian life was all about? Well, I want to assure you the Christian life is all about those commodities, and I want to assure you as well that you can have complete joy and peace even in the midst of all kinds of turmoil. I'm going to talk about it this Sunday, Father's Day, at 9:15 a.m. on Moments.
So if you just joined us, we read this story in the first half hour of this woman who got online and fabricated a story about how she was pregnant and how her baby was terminally ill and was going to die. And that prompted just hours and hours of emotional distress on the part of so many people who got caught up in this, and they're praying to God and probably praying for this child who didn't really exist because it was all made up.
Right.
Now, you might think to yourself, boy, that would really tick God off. He's, you know, all these prayers are coming up, and it's all based on a lie. And this woman, you know, she really deserves the old divine 2x4.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't happen. She didn't get a 2x4.
Right.
Eventually, she was discovered, and her fabrication, her lying was revealed, and now there is a certain amount of shame that goes with that, obviously. She says she's sorry. She confesses. Kind of like Achan there in Joshua 7.
Right.
Who was revealed in due time.
Mm-hmm.
And he and his whole family died,
right.
I think.
Right, right.
Then there's David, who committed adultery with Bathsheba, the wife of another man, and then saw to it that her husband was killed in battle, and so he could have her to... I guess David was thinking he was free and clear at some point, and then all of a sudden
right.
Nathan shows up,
yeah.
You are the man.
Right.
Then there's Ananias and Sapphira acting like real church big shots there, laying wealth at the feet of the disciples as if they had sold property and given it all to the church.
Right.
Even though
that
wasn't
what
true.
They claimed.
That's
they
what they
claimed it was all. Yeah.
And they were dead before the sun was down.
Right.
Now, I know the Bible doesn't say that this lady who pulled this hoax, the Bible doesn't say that she paid for that with shame and embarrassment, but it's sort of consistent with some of the other things I read in the Bible. Do you think the Lord brought her down And can we speculate? Is that a possibility that the Lord brought her down and revealed her hoax and brought this shame upon her?
Well, I don't know what God is doing in the world, and I'm happy to say, actually quite happy to say, that I'm not a prophet, because the prophets have a very difficult existence. But sin does have consequence, and that's part of its allure, is that it deceives, you know, sin always deceives me and says, there won't be a consequence here. So whether it's a public consequence or, you know, you mentioned these well-known cases in the scripture where God actually directly responded, if we could say it that way, to a sin, especially on the part of someone like King David, you know. But sin always has consequences, even if it's just kind of an erosion of my character. I do it once, it's easy to do it the second time. And then there's the law of diminishing returns. You know about that, where a little sinful pleasure repeated becomes less pleasurable, so I have to do it in a little more exaggerated fashion. I mean, this is just the way human beings work, at least fallen human beings. So I think, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. I mean, whenever I was thinking about this morning for some reason, whenever I hear about a pastor who has fallen into some sort of grave error, stealing or lying or immorality or something, I just think, man, that could be me, because I'm...
You don't think, well, I would never do that.
Well, I probably do, but I never should, you know. I mean, I just, those same seeds of sort of selfishness and fear and greed, whatever it is, they live right in my heart, and they'll be there until Jesus comes back. So, you know, and when you think that way, of course, it's a lot easier to be, at the very least, compassionate towards someone who has stumbled and fallen. And you call, as Dr. Walter Meyer II used to say, you call a spade and not a gardening implement. You know, it's lying, it's stealing, whatever it is. But at the same time, you know, you're able to show sort of empathic compassion, because we're all the same. I mean, the church is just a hospital, you know. And if I ever get on my high horse, you know, I should get knocked off on my you-know-what. I think the German word is Keister.
Keister.
Never know how to say that. So, yeah, but it is a difficulty. And, and see, here's the cool thing is God has given, if the great commandment for a believer, because, you know, as 1 John puts it, beloved, if God has so loved us, we also ought to love one another, right? Then, well, by golly, there's candidates close at hand. Mm. You know, there's people I work with, and there's people in my neighborhood and in my congregation. And you know, because of who I am as a Christian, as a baptized person, I'm going to take a little 20 seconds after church and go up to someone that I haven't talked to in a while and say, how are you? You know, I was thinking about you the other day, and just, I know you've been looking for a new job, and I just wanted to ask how that's going. You know how good that feels.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, somebody noticed me. Somebody cared about me. And if you just multiply that times a gazillion, well then, forgive me, but who needs Facebook?
You get dangerously close to forming a relationship there, Pastor. I don't know. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Jeremy, you're on the Bible study.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I was listening earlier to both of you somewhat bemoaning the fact that people aren't as much face-to-face using this new technology, you know, to communicate.
And I think we were griping, actually, not bemoaning.
But it just struck me. 100 years ago, ministers probably felt the same way about radio. There you two are, talking into microphones in a studio. I think it's a little small-minded to... kind of poo-pooed. Anything can be abused, but I think this new way of communication has a lot more benefits than it does drawbacks. But I just wanted to make that point.
Right.
It just struck me as ironic that you were griping about people not being personal, and there you are in a studio talking into little microphones. No big deal.
Well stated, Jeremy. Well stated.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
God bless you both.
All right. I feel suitably slapped on the hand here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He makes a good point, and that is whether it's radio or whether it's Facebook.
Yeah.
It's an upside. There's
a
downside.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, the thing that and I'm very happy that irony has been pointed out, because I think we need to see that. So thanks to Jeremy for that. Yeah, the one thing that does concern me is, placed in this larger context of what seems to be the case, so sort of across the board, again, not just Christian, non-Christian, but in American society. And I think you see it in our political rhetoric. I think you see it just all the time. And apparently it can be demonstrated that, again, Americans are just losing the opportunities and even the desire to make the effort to get together face-to-face. But Jeremy's point well taken, and I am a self-confessed Luddite, but I am also on Facebook.
What is the origin of the term?
Well, the Luddites, I'd have to look it back up. It's an agrarian term, I wouldn't refuse penicillin if they offered it to me if I was sick. So
all right,
good point from
this.
Jeremy.
How many kids you got?
Four.
Four kids. Did you, have you, do you, or did they go through a phase where they would say, awesome?
Yes.
Is God awesome?
What do you mean by awesome?
That's what I want to know. I want to know what awesome really means.
Well, words mean what we say they mean, right? I mean, that's called the conventionality of signifiers.
Does the word awesome show up in Hebrew or Greek in the Bible?
Well, you're asking two questions. Is God of such a quality and caliber that he is larger, greater, more powerful, etc.? Fearful, but again, the word awesome, of course, in English is related to the term awe, and we could converse about whether or not Americans feel what at least used to be called awe about anything anymore.
You know, I remember when a few years ago when Albert Pujols hit that home run down in Houston, left the stadium.
Yeah.
And they showed some of the Astros players in the dugout who were kind of thought they were on their way to winning that game, going on in the playoffs. And,
right.
And I would say they were in awe.
They were sort of awestruck.
Yeah, they were awestruck by that moment.
Yeah.
They went on in the playoffs anyway. But I'm trying to think of an experience in my life where there was something that I understood or perceived about God that left me looking like or feeling like that. I'm having trouble coming up with one. Am I a Luddite?
No, I think a Luddite would have a better chance at feeling awe.
Oh, really?
Because, again, technology, assists in bombarding us with all sorts of interesting and spectacular experiences. As a small example, our younger son, maybe a couple of years ago, and he was just curious. He wasn't, mocking me or anything, although Lord knows I deserve to be mocked. He said, Dad, did you see the movie Jaws when it came out? I said, well, not right away, but we saw it. And he said, did that scare you? And, of course, he had seen it or seen snippets of it and saw how primitive the technological special effects were compared to what people can do today, with various technologies for the media and the movies. So God is greater than we are. He does amazing things.
How much greater? And here's why. Don't we have embedded in us a natural compulsion to diminish the distance between him and us?
Yes, and to promote ourselves. To think that I am more powerful, more important than I actually am.
In church this week, some folks are going to hear a reading from Job. It's from Job 38. Familiar with it? You know where I'm going?
Go ahead.
Here's the way it goes. Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm. He said, Who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? Or what were its on what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy? Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness? When I fixed limits for it and set its doors and bars in place? When I said, "This far you may come and no farther. Here is where your proud waves halt." I'm thinking to myself, I'm not sure I've got the awe and reverence for this God who is speaking to Job here in, in chapter 38 that maybe I ought to have.
Right.
And this weekend might offer me an opportunity to adjust that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me get ready for worship this weekend in the context of this reading?
You'll probably have to go out into the Rocky Mountains or be on a boat in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico with a storm coming up, you know?
Yeah. Is that enough?
It could be a place to start because the creation can give a message, doesn't always, of course, but it can give a message about the Creator. That's what God says to Job. He says, just look at this world that is so much greater than you and that you didn't bring into existence, and then think about this fact, I did. I brought it into existence.
No, actually, it's 39 billion years old, and it evolved out of hydrogen and helium gas.
Well,
blah,
I mean,
blah,
you know,
blah,
just
blah.
Even setting aside, you know, the question of that people debate about how old the world is or the universe, even setting that aside, just look at it. We went camping one time. I remember our oldest was at night, you know, in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, and it's clear.
Stars that night.
Yeah. And I remember we were sitting at the campfire and the embers had died down, and she said, just out of the blue, she said, I bet this is what Abraham kind of felt like. You know, your descendants will be as the stars of the heaven, you know. So, yeah, and another way to do it, actually, I think, is to, if you can't do that, go down deep into your own heart and into the lives of other people and see, again, how complicated we are, how deeply all of us have been hurt, how deep our fears and anguishes can be. Just look around at our society and see how twisted and damaged people so often get, and then realize you can't fix that. I mean, just deal with it seriously. And then go to church and worship the God who actually came down into it to fix it now and to finally fix it on the great day. See, superficial living only needs a superficial God. But profound living, whether it's profound connection with the creation or just a profound look at just how flawed I am and the world is. I mean, this is why ministry, you know, this is why being a pastor is so, or it can be so good for your faith as a Christian. Because if you're paying attention, you know, you can't fix this stuff. Only Christ can fix this stuff. So
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Selena, you're on the Bible study.
Hi. You guys have kind of redeemed yourself going on this, but when you first made the statement about you didn't think you had anything or involving God that you could be awesome about as much as the baseball players, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I thought, when was the last time you looked into the face of a baptized baby and didn't see that kind of awe, a newly baptized child?
Well, if you look with the eyes of faith, you're going to be in awe. But
right.
A lot of people are just going to see a happy little innocent little baby there, and that's all they're going to see, and they're not going to be in awe.
Well, I realize a lot of people, but you were saying that it was a long time since you had seen that, and I was like, wait a minute, I can't really believe you saying that, but I think you redeemed yourself when you went on with the rest of it.
I got both hands slapped now. Wow.
Excellent, excellent.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Excellent, you say?
No, that we got our hands slapped.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm feeling my feelings are kind of hurt.
It's good for you.
Boy, no wonder you're so popular down at the seminary with all those students. Just a straight shooter, aren't you?
Again, God is big, I am small. And that, you know, it's God is large, I am not. And whatever it takes, again, as Jeremy said, technology is a great blessing, and yet its danger is that it magnifies us and our importance artificially. And there are limits that we sometimes forget are there.
Well, you know, in the context of Job, or in the context of our former conversation with the woman who deceived half the planet with her blogging or whatever it was, you know, I have this feeling that there's just way too many of us. This woman in this story claimed to be a pro-life Christian.
And she may very well be.
And she may very well be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid there are too many of us, an increasing number of us, who sort of have this... Well, I don't know if there's going to be a judgment day or not. Yeah, I've heard about that. I guess we'll find out if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But if it happens, you know, and the Lord says to me, depart from me into everlasting fire, or whatever it is that he says there, then I'm going to say, I don't think so. Excuse me. Better review the record again there. I don't think you got that right. You know,
yeah.
I'm going to just kind of shush him and... And this God that's on display here in Job 38 doesn't sound shushable to me.
No, he's not. And this is why, you know, in our Lutheran categories, we talk about law and gospel, right? Without the law, without the will of God, which is clearly above me and beyond me, and yet which rightly lays its claim on me, God is God, I am not. He decides the purpose of my life. I don't.
He decides the purpose of your life?
Indeed, right? The purpose of my life, as Luther says in the Catechism, is that I may be his own. See, I'm not an independent being. I have to belong. Human beings have to belong to someone. And the two options, at least in the biblical view of things, are the devil... and God. So I may have the illusion that my life is my own, but it's not. So the reason why, as again Luther has been explaining, why Christ did what he did, it was he had a purpose, that I may be his own and live under him in his kingdom. And here it is, serve him in everlasting righteousness. That's the purpose of my life, to belong to God, and to live under his blessing, and to serve him. And of course, as you said, I serve him by loving him and loving my neighbor, whether it's my wife or my children or my coworkers, whoever it happens to be. So yeah, God decides the purpose of my life. I belong to him.
We study Job here on the Bible
Which is
study.
A good thing.
Amen. We studied Job here on the Bible studies some years ago, and I had my little personal revelation, which probably was... fun for the pastors to observe, but you really have all of this dust flinging going on until you get to Job 38, and all this carrying on, and the wife, and the friends, and blah, 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 and then you get to Job 38 thereabouts, and you get the deal.
Yeah.
God is God.
Right, right.
And that means his will prevails, period. And if you want him to will another way, well, you don't have that power. You don't have that authority. For me, Job sort of is a demonstration of these two entities, God and the devil.
Uh-huh.
And God beats the devil.
Right.
And there it is.
Although he doesn't often tell us exactly how he's going about doing that in a particular situation.
No.
And that's the difficulty.
Yeah, it's kind of mysterious.
Right.
But at the end of the book, at the end of the day,
yeah,
or at the end of time,
right,
God's will prevail.
Yes.
And until Sunday, for many of us who might hear this reading on Sunday, we've been working really hard on squeezing him down, getting him down to eye level here, where we can stick our finger in his nose and say, now listen here, this is the way it's going to be.
Right.
I'm coming in.
Right.
Get out of the way. I realize that that sounds kind of ridiculous, but there's more truth to that than some of us care to admit.
Yeah.
And I feel for the person who's going to be shocked, just the way those Matthew 25, is it Matthew 25?
Mm-hmm.
Those folks who say, well, now, wait a minute here. Why did we not visit you, and what are you talking about?
Right.
It's not going to matter. It's not going to be like that argument's going to carry the day.
Right.
Job 38 this weekend gives us a chance, I think, to peek behind the veil and see that awesome God that is back there.
Yes, and then to say, if there is such a person as this kind of a God who really is beyond my ken and my understanding, how could I ever know him? And, of course, this is where the good news comes in. No one has ever seen God, John 1:18, the only begotten God who is in the bosom of the Father. He has made him known. So, as Rev Rossow likes to say, and he's been quoted in one of our emeritus faculty, he's a wonderful preacher and teacher. He's been quoted by several of his students, my colleagues, as saying this: we know precious little about God, but the little we know is very precious. And that's a great line, and it's also true, because the little we know is centered in Jesus of Nazareth, right? Who did what he did and died what he died and rose how he rose, because that God actually loves me. And even stranger, he loves you.
More pith.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that if you're going to look into the face of a baptized baby and see something there that's really awesome.
Yes, indeed.
You got to go through Job 38.
Yeah, first you go there, and then you go to the God who comes down. Yeah, I actually baptized a baby last Monday in the seminary chapel. Yeah, student's child, his new son, Noah. And, it was a wonderful, it was actually a very quieting and humbling, and so therefore in that sense awesome experience to believe what God promises. And, it was a wonderful, wonderful time. We got him wet, and he was born again, so.
Dr. Jeff Gibbs, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chuck.
God's blessings with that critiquing the other theologians business. I'll be praying for you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.